In John chapter 19, Pilate's there. Pilate is stuck between this, we could say, a rock and a hard place. He was facing this crowd that was demanding that Jesus be crucified. And they looked at Pilate and said, "We want you to sentence this man to be crucified." The Jewish people didn't have the authority to crucify someone, so they needed Pilate's stamp of approval on this. And there was this angry mob shouting at Pilate to do this, crucify this man. Pilate also had a conscience, and his conscience was telling him, this is an innocent man. Three times in this passage, Pilate points out that this man had done no wrong. And he knew that Jesus Christ was innocent. He knew that Jesus Christ wasn't guilty of the things that they said. And here Pilate was, he was between right and wrong, between a rock and a hard place, this crowd and his conscience. And Pilate had a choice to make. You know, I call this passage the temptation of Pilate. The temptation of Pilate. We know the temptation of Jesus Christ in the wilderness. And this was a time in Pilate's life where he had a real choice that he had to make. And it's the same choice that we all face on a daily basis. And it's really the question, who are we going to please? Who are we going to please with our choices, with our life? Are we going to please the maybe the loudest voice in our life, our flesh that clamors for the things of the world? Or are we going to please God, where we have that still small voice of the Holy Spirit through the Word of God calling us to do what is right, what we know is right? And there we are. We're in that moment of temptation. And in John chapter 19, we see a man that's struggling with this. And we see his struggle between what he's going to do, and we see him ultimately giving in to the wrong voice. We see him ultimately making that wrong decision. In Luke chapter 23 and verse 24, it says, Pilate gave sentence that it should be as they required. What they wanted, Pilate said, we'll go with that. Matthew chapter 27 and verses 24 through 26, it said, when Pilate saw that he could prevail nothing, but that rather a tumult was made, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this just person, see ye to it. Then answered all the people and said, his blood be upon us and on our children. Then released he Barabbas unto them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified. He delivered him to be crucified, and no amount of hand washing on Pilate's part was going to absolve him of this guilt, the guilt of what he did in sending Jesus Christ to be crucified, because Pilate clearly knew that this was wrong. He clearly knew. There's no question where you look at it and go, well, maybe Pilate didn't really know. Maybe Pilate didn't understand that Jesus Christ was who he was or any of that. We've already seen what Jesus Christ told Pilate. We already know what Pilate's conscience was telling him, that Jesus Christ was an innocent man. And Pilate looked at all of that, and he looked at his circumstances, and he looked at his options, and he clearly picked what he knew to be wrong. He clearly went the wrong way. And we can look at this and say, you know what, how did Pilate arrive at that destination? When Pilate knew that this was wrong, how did Pilate get to crucifying Jesus Christ? You know, I remember when we were younger, we would go to Vermont during the summers for a couple weeks. And as we would travel, I remember we would stop at, I believe it was the Welcome Center, one of the Welcome Centers for Vermont. And we would go there, you know, to go to the bathroom and all of that. And when we were in there, in that Welcome Center, I remember they had a little rack with brochures for all these different destinations. And I remember that as we would wait there, I would go and I would look at those. And I would take the ones that I want. Hey, we're going on vacation. I would say, you know what, let's go to this museum. This looks like fun. I'd like to go there. And I'd take that brochure. There's like a national park. I'll go there on this vacation. And, you know, a railroad, sure, I'll go on a train ride. You know, I'm picking all these brochures thinking I'm gonna have a lot of fun this vacation, you know, and we would never go there. But I would always go through and I would have all these brochures about things that looked really interesting to me, or, you know, I like these destinations and these attractions. You know, our flesh does that, right? The world sets out all these attractions and these destinations, and Satan keeps the world well-stocked with these things. And our flesh comes along and goes, you know what, this looks good. Hey, it goes, hey, why don't we go here? Why don't we do that? Why don't we go to this attraction? And it looks at all of these, and it likes to pick out some. And maybe it's got some that it constantly hammers away at your life, saying, hey, why don't we do this? Why don't we go there? And it holds these things up, and our flesh likes to plan for these things, and our flesh likes to get us to those destinations. And we've all have a flesh that has these destination spots that it wants us to go to, but then there's times where we find ourselves there. And we find ourselves where our flesh wants us to be. We find ourselves in these sins and in these destinations. And we can look around and say, how did I get here? Like we look at Pilate and say, how did he get to that decision? We can look at ourselves and say, how did I get to where I am? How did I get to this place in my life where I'm doing this, or I'm involved in that, or it seems to be who I am. How did I get to this spot? And we can learn some lessons from Pilate's temptation about this. And what we see in John 19 is that Pilate tried first to live in this sort of middle ground. Right? He tried to do two things that we're going to see tonight in an attempt to like straddle the fence and kind of be between giving into the crowd and between what his conscience told him to do. And he tried to fit in this middle ground. But the middle ground, when it comes to temptation, is just the first step in the wrong direction. That's really what it is. It's the first step in a wrong direction. The Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu said, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. Journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And sometimes we find ourselves at the end of that 1,000-step journey and going to the wrong place and saying, how did I get there? Right? And really it's that first step, because the first step determines your direction. And your first step determines your destination. That first step determines where you're going to end up. Pilate didn't just jump to crucifying Jesus. There were a couple steps that he took, a couple first steps that he made. And really, there's the same first steps that we all take. And to us, they may not appear as bad as the destination. And we could say, you know what, they're not that bad. But really what they are they're very deceptive, in that their direction is headed in the wrong way. And sometimes we miss that. We miss the direction that they're taking us, these first simple steps. But if we consistently recognize and resist these first steps by God's grace and by his power, it'll keep us from the wrong destination. It'll keep us from that journey of 1,000 steps where we find ourselves where we know we should not be and where we do not want to be. So here are Pilate's first steps. The first one in the first 5 verses is that we find Pilate settling. We find him settling. So in the first 5 verses, it says, then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him, and the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe and said, Hail, King of the Jews. And they smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again and saith unto them, Behold, I bring him forth to you that ye may know that I find no fault in him. Then came Jesus forth wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate saith unto them, Behold the man. Pilate settled. You know, this year, I don't think it's been the best year for yard sailing. But I'm not good at yard sailing anyways, because you're supposed to like haggle for the prices, right? You go there and there's this sort of unstated agreement that the price they put, they're willing to come down on it a little bit, and you just have to, you know, you offer lower and then they meet you in the middle, right? That sort of thing. I don't know. It doesn't seem to occur to me to do that. I look at the price and go, okay, if I want this, then I will just pay this price. And it doesn't seem to even dawn on me that I need to offer them something lower than what it is. So I'm not very good at that. But that's what you're supposed to do, and that's what Pilate does, right? He hears their demands. He hears the demands of the crowd that they crucify Jesus. So Pilate says, well, how about this? How about I just, you know, I rough Jesus up a bit? How about if I scourge him and I make fun of him as this king, right? And how about I put this crown of thorns on his head, and I put this purple robe on him, and I make fun of Jesus Christ, and I bring him out before all these people and say, yeah, here's your king. And he says, what if I do that? Maybe that'll please the people enough that they'll stop demanding for Jesus Christ to be crucified. He says, what if I just, instead of going all the way, what if I just take a small step in their direction? What if I just meet them part way? Maybe that'll be enough to satisfy. And Pilate settled, and by settling, he surrendered a bit. He gave in. And he gave in at least part way to what they were wanting. And we understand what he did, right? We see the direction that he went with this. He went in the wrong direction. even though he just gave in a little bit, he didn't give in all the way to what they wanted, but it was that first step in that direction. He started heading toward what they wanted. He was heading in the wrong direction with this first step. And in that, he set this sort of pattern, and he laid down this precedent for what he was going to do. I've read that salesmen can try a tactic where they, if they're trying to sell you something, they get you to start saying yes to simple questions at the beginning. Like if they're selling you a vacuum, they go up to you and they knock on your door, which I don't think they do anymore. But you know, they knock on your door and say, "Hey, don't you like it when your floors are nice and clean?" And you go, "Yeah, I do like clean floors." Right? Who's gonna say no to that? And they're like, "Hey, you know, don't you like it when you look down and you see those nice lines in the carpet from where you vacuumed, it just looks clean?" And you go, "Yeah, I do like that." Then they're like, "Don't you like a good deal, you know, saving money on things?" And you're like, "Yeah, I do like saving money on things." And then, you know, they keep going on this line and you're just going, "Yes, yes, yes." And then they do the final question. "Don't you want to spend like $600 on this nice vacuum?" And they're leading you somewhere, right? They're trying to lay down this pattern of you just saying yes to their question. So on that final question, you'll go, "Yeah, I do want that vacuum. You know, it's $600. That's fine. I'll do the payments. You know, that's no problem." And they're just leading you on in this. And Pilate's doing this. He laid this first pattern of giving into them and of saying yes to kind of what they wanted. And we do that. We do that with temptation. We know what our flesh wants, and we see that brochure and we see that destination. And we say, "You know what, I don't want to go that far." But we say, "Maybe if I just give in a little bit, then the temptation will be gone. And that strength of the temptation will be gone. And I won't want to go all the way, but you know, if I just do that first little step, then that'll be fine." And we say that, you know, that's as far as I'm going to go. And settling is that first yes that we make. And maybe it is, you know, we look at that thing and maybe that decision it's fine. You know, it's small, it's harmless, and we say, "You know what, it's not really important," and we talk about it like that and we kind of look at it that way and say it's not that big of a deal, right? It's small, it's harmless. And we look at it that way, but it's really not about the legality or the morality or even the safety of that decision. What it is the direction. It's the direction that we've just taken that first step in. The direction where it's headed toward that wrong destination. It's headed toward where our flesh wants us to go. And it's that first step. And it's just laying that pattern of us giving in and of us surrendering to that, the pull of that temptation and the pull of our flesh in the wrong direction. And we need to just say no because we know where it's leading us, because we see that. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 27, it says, "Neither give place to the devil." Now, that's in the context of harboring anger, where it says, "Let not the sun go down upon your wrath." But don't give place to the devil. Don't give him any room, because you know it's never going to be enough. Hey, this wasn't enough for the crowd, was it? They looked at Pilate and said, "Okay, crucify him. Yes, we see what you've done. Yes, we see that you've beaten him. Yes, we see that you're making fun of him. You put this crown of thorns upon his head. Crucify him." It wasn't enough for the crowd to stop at this little part. And understand, it's never going to be enough for Satan for us to go a little bit. It's never going to satisfy our flesh to go just a little bit. If anything, it's just going to feed it. It's going to make it worse, and it's going to make it more demanding upon us. Our flesh is never going to be satisfied if we settle. So one of Pilate's first steps was he said, I'll give in just a little bit. I'll do just a little bit to try and appease the crowd. And we see the direction that he took. We see where he was headed in this first step. He said, "I'll make a small concession. I'll give in just a little bit." And that's what our flesh says to us. It says, "Hey, I've got this destination for you. Don't worry about going all the way. Don't worry about the whole thing. How about just a little bit? Just give in a small bit. Just surrender a tiny bit." And it wants us to get us started in that direction. It wants to get us moving in the wrong direction. So Pilate's first step was he settled. The second one I want to see, and the last one in verses 6 down through 11. So in John 19 and verse 6, it says, "When the chief priests, therefore, and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, 'Crucify him, crucify him.' Pilate saith unto them, Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. The Jews answered him, We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the judgment hall, and saith unto Jesus, Whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. Then saith Pilate unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and have power to release thee? Jesus answered, Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. And from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him, but the Jews cried out, saying, If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. When Pilate therefore heard that, saying, he brought forth Jesus and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover in about the sixth hour, and he saith unto the Jews, Behold your king. But they cried out, Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him! Pilate saith unto them, Shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, We have no king but Caesar. So in verse 6, Pilate looks at them and says, when they cry out, crucify him, crucify him, Pilate says, listen, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to crucify you. He says, I know he's innocent. I find no fault in him. He's basically telling them, look, you take him and you do what you want to do with him. And then in verse 7, the Jews answered him, we have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. And this is interesting, because now they're changing their charge against him. And this is really why they wanted him to be crucified, because of his what they called his blasphemy, that he was saying he was the Son of God. But they approached Pilate first, saying it's because he's, you know, against Roman authority, right? He's stirring up a rebellion against the Roman government. But now it's finally coming out what they really wanted, their true motivation for this. Verse 8 says that when Pilate heard that, he was afraid, and it doesn't really tell us why he was afraid of this. Maybe he was more afraid of the people because of this. Maybe he was even more afraid because he was convinced of the innocence of Jesus Christ. It doesn't say, but he was just terrified because of this. So in verse 9, he goes in to the judgment hall, and he approaches Jesus Christ and asks him, Whence art thou? Right? They had said he claims to be the Son of God. So now Pilate's trying to figure out maybe his parentage, his lineage, where he came from. So he asks him, where are you from? But Jesus Christ doesn't answer. So Pilate, verse 10, in his pride, says, listen, how can you be silent? Don't you know who I am? Don't you know the power that I have? I love verse 11, where Jesus says, listen, despite what you think, you have no power at all against me. And he says, despite how it looks, you don't have any power over me. And he says, therefore he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. Verse 12, Pilate therefore sought to release him, right? He's looking for this way out. But again, the Jews say to him, listen, if you're Caesar's friend, you can't let him go, right? And they're appealing to his love for authority, right? And that Caesar had given him this authority, so that they're like, listen, if you want to stay in power, you can't let Jesus Christ go. And so verses 12 down through 14, He talks to Jesus Christ, and he brings him forth into this place of judgment. And then in verse 15, the people cry out, crucify him, crucify him. And Pilate says, shall I crucify your king? Say, we have no king but Caesar. And so then Pilate gives the command to have Jesus Christ crucified. But do you see what Pilate's doing here? And I think he's stalling. He's stalling. Pilate knows what the right choice is. He knew what the right choice is before verse 6, right? He knew that there was no fault in him. He says that in the end of chapter 18 and verse 18. I find in him no fault at all. So it's not like Pilate needed to research this out anymore. It's not like Pilate needed to figure out the innocence of Jesus Christ or what was the right choice. He knew this. Instead, Pilate was just taking his time on this. He was trying to find a way out. Trying to find a way maybe to please everyone. You know, some decisions don't take time, do they? I mean, some decisions do take time. There's some things that we need to think about, like buying a car. You maybe need to look it over a little bit and do a little research on the car, you know, do the Carfax and all of those things, whatever. If you're buying a house, you should probably do a little research on that house first. You know, there's a lot of decisions that we make that we say, you know what, it's good to take your time in those things. Don't rush these decisions. Don't jump into them. Take a little time. You know, there's other decisions where they shouldn't take us any time, right? There's decisions like, should you steal from your company? Well, I mean, that shouldn't take you any time. You shouldn't have to think about that. That should be a quick decision, right? No, I shouldn't steal from my company. Should I lie on my tax forms? No. I mean, there's a lot of easy decisions that we can make and say, you know what, I don't really need to think about those things. Right? I don't need to take a lot of time and study those out. But when we do, when we have a decision that's very clearly right and wrong, and we stall on that decision, and we take a little time to think about it, what does that say about us? What does that say? It means we're considering doing the wrong thing. That's what that means, right? It means that we're really thinking about making the wrong choice in that moment. Pilate knew exactly what he needed to do. He needed to look at Jesus Christ and look at that crowd and say, he is innocent. I'm not going to crucify him. I'm not going to do that. He should have easily made that right decision at the end of chapter 18 and say, I will release Jesus Christ. I will not crucify him. But he takes his time. And so we have the beginning of chapter 19 where he talks to the crowd and he talks to Jesus Christ and he talks to the crowd and he talks to Jesus Christ. And it should have been a real simple decision on the part of Pilate. And when we stall, when we take time to think about things that really are very clear according to Scripture and that are just a matter of clear right and clear wrong, and when we take our time to think about those things, that's a first step in the wrong direction. That's the first step toward a wrong destination. That's the first step toward us doing what we know we should not do and what the Bible makes very clear for us. In Romans chapter 8 and verse 5, it says, they that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh, but they that are after the Spirit, the things of the Spirit. It says they mind the things of the flesh. You know what that means? It means to think about those things, to consider those, to let them roll around in your mind. But it says those that are of the Spirit, they mind the things of the Spirit. What they have rolling around in their mind are spiritual things, not those decisions that the flesh wants them to make. We don't need to take a lot of time to think about what's right and wrong. We need to make the right decision. And I think sometimes we fight temptation a lot longer than we need to. The Bible says that with every temptation, God has made a way of escape, that we may be able to bear it. But sometimes we take our time and we like to think about that temptation. And instead of taking that way of escape and just looking at that temptation and saying, by God's grace, I'm not going to do that. I'm saying no to that. Instead of that, we stall on it. And we take our time to think about it. And we can even paint this in a spiritual way in our minds. But understand that stalling over these simple black and white, right and wrong decisions means we're taking a first step in the wrong direction. We look in at Joseph when he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. That was a quick decision he made. He made it so fast he left his coat behind, right? He just said, I'm out of here. I'm not going to think about this. I'm not going to discuss it with her. He said, I'm saying no to this, and I'm leaving. In contrast to that, in Joshua chapter 7, we have the story of Jericho as you know, the Israelites go in to conquer that city, and we know about Achan, right? They were told, Israel was told, when you go into the city, when you conquer it, you don't take anything out of that city. But in Joshua chapter 7 and verse 20, after Achan is confronted with this sin, he confesses, and he says, indeed, I have sinned against the Lord God of Israel, and thus have I done. And he said, when I saw among the spoils a goodly Babylonish garment and 200 shekels of silver and a wedge of gold of 50 shekels weight, he said, then I coveted them and took them, and behold, they are hid in the earth in the midst of my tent and the silver under it. He said, I saw them, and then he said, I coveted them. Now, it doesn't say how long he took to maybe gaze at those or to covet them, but he took longer than he should have. That should have been a real fast decision on Achan's part. He should have seen those things and said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not taking those things. I'm not even going to take one more look at those things. I'm moving on. It was made very clear to them what they should not do in that city. But Achan stalled at least for a little, and he looked at that, and he looked at it long enough to covet that, to covet those items, and to say, you know what, I think that'd look good on me. Or, you know, I could do a lot of things with that money. And he stalled on what should have been a very fast decision for Achan. And that was his first step toward the destination of taking those things and hiding them to the destruction of his family. stalling. It's when you know what it's right, but you take your time on that decision. And you say, I'm going to think about it. I'm going to, you know, consider it for a little bit. When we know what's right and what's wrong. And it's the first step toward the wrong destination. So Pilate's first steps, he settled and Pilate stalled. And ultimately, Pilate sentenced Jesus Christ to be crucified in verse 16. And he took these first steps. And our first steps determine our direction and they determine our destination. They determine where we're going to end up. And so the lesson for us tonight is, listen, don't play around with these first steps. Sometimes we like to tell ourselves that I think that we're strong enough to stay on this first step. And we say, you know what, I'm strong enough. I can stall a little bit on this and I won't go any further. Or you know what, I'll settle. I'll give in a little bit, but I'm not going any further. And we look at ourselves and we say, I'm strong enough to stay right here on this first step. And then you know what? Eventually we get to the place where we're strong enough to stay on the second step. And then we're strong enough to stay on the third step. And then we're strong enough to get all the way to our destination. And it's at that point that we realize it wasn't strength at all, was it? It was just weakness. It was us giving in to these things. It was us not being strong enough. And in ourselves, we are not strong enough. But Jesus Christ is. And he is strong enough to not keep us on that first step or that second step, but to keep us from taking those first steps. He's strong enough to prevent that direction and from us getting even close to the destination where sin wants us to be. Have you ever watched a child get on their first escalator? You know, and they approach it and they see it's moving. All of a sudden these steps are, you know, they're coming out of the ground. And so they're really kind of hesitant and a little bit scared of this. So sometimes, you know, you gotta pick them up and put them on. But then they get to the point where they take that first kind of wobbly step onto that escalator. But you know us, we go there and, you know, we hardly even think about it. You know, you just kind of step onto the escalator. There's probably some people that are still a little nervous about it. But you know, you get to the point where it's that first step, it doesn't mean anything to you. You just get on it and you go. And we can get to that point with temptation, where it's like we don't even see that first step there anymore. And we've gotten to the point where we don't even recognize when we start heading in that direction. And Jesus Christ wants us tonight to see those first steps for really what they are and where they're taking us and what our flesh and what sin is trying to get us to do and where it's trying to get us to go with those just those first steps, as harmless as we might think them to be and as safe as we might consider them. Jesus Christ wants to see us to see them for what they are. I recently finished a book about the whale ship Essex, which was a whaling ship that sailed out of Nantucket in 1819. And Nantucket was their thing. They did whaling and they would send out multiple ships. And so these ships, they would go out and they would go south off the Massachusetts coast and they would go all the way down around South America and then up into the Pacific Ocean where they would have their whaling grounds. That's eventually where they came to be. And so the whale ship Essex set out in 1819. Captain George Pollard was in charge of this vessel, and he had 20 other men on that ship. And so they went out, and one of the guys deserted partway through. But eventually, after a long time, they reached the whaling grounds, and they were thousands of miles off the coast of South America. And as they were there, they were hunting these sperm whales. And all of a sudden, as they were hunting, one massive, giant bull sperm whale attacked their ship, and it rammed them. It rammed right into the side of their ship. And then it backed off and it rammed them the second time. And on that second time, it put an enormous hole right in the side of their ship. And in 10 minutes, that boat sank. And so as they see this happening, they begin to panic on this ship. So the 20 men get three of their whaling boats, their smaller boats that they would go out and hunt the whales with. And they piled as many things as they could, like food and all these things, into these whaling boats. And so all 20 men piled into these three ships and they shoved off from that sinking boat and they watched their ship go beneath the waves. And there they were, thousands of miles away from the coast of South America, just in these ships. And they had some small sails that they had rigged on these ships, and they made a decision that they were going to head, they would go south and then they would go east to South America. And they had some other islands that were closer, but they had been told that these islands had very hostile natives and cannibals on them. So they said, we don't want to take any chance there, even though they were closer. So they made this decision of how they were going to get there. And for 89 days, these men were in these small whale boats out on the ocean and feeding off hardtack. And so when they finally got to the land, there were only 5 men left and 2 of these whale boats left. And the rest of them had died. And they finally made it to land, and they were rescued, and they were taken eventually back to Nantucket. They got back to their destination. Well, they kind of went back about their life, but it was a year later that Captain George Pollard was commissioned to get on another whaleboat or another whaling ship and head back out. And so he did. You know, this was his livelihood. This is what this guy did. So he got back on another ship called the Two Brothers, and he headed out. And again, he goes around the coast of the Horn of South America and the Pacific. And when he was several hundred miles off the coast of Hawaii, his ship hit some rocks out in the middle of the ocean, and it sunk. And he, again, had to get back in these whale boats. And the account of this, they said he just sat there stunned. And they said it was mesmerized despair. And you can imagine this man, what was going through his mind. Right? What are the odds, right? They say that lightning never strikes the same place twice. And here is this guy, two times in a row, he goes out as captain of these ships. Both times, his ship sank. And here he is the second time, and I'm sure he was asking himself, how did I get here? Why am I here again? How did I make it to this same spot where here I am with a sunken boat, and now I'm facing another who knows how long before I get rescued in these whale boats again? Now the next day they were picked up by another whaling ship. But you have to imagine this guy sitting there going, how did I get here again? Why am I in this same spot where I was not that long ago? It's left in the middle of the ocean. And I wonder if tonight you've ever, maybe at night where you go to bed, you put your head on your pillow and you just lay there and go, you know what? How did I get here? How did I get where I am? Why am I at this destination where I've done what I didn't want to do? And I made the wrong choice again. And here I am where I'm at the destination where my flesh wanted me to get to. And I've taken that wrong path. And maybe you just lay there and said, Lord, how did I get here? Why am I confessing this again? Why am I having to ask for forgiveness for the same thing I had to ask for forgiveness yesterday and the day before that? Why do I find myself always in that same destination? Why do I find myself here again? You know, if we look at Captain Pollard and we ask the question, why was he here again? We could trace it back to that first step he took up that gangplank, right? Getting on that second whaling ship, where he could have said, you know what, I'm not taking that step. I'm not going onto that ship again. You know, we could trace his sinking of that ship all the way back to him boarding that ship in Nantucket and taking that first step onto that ship. And, you know, we can find ourselves, you know, we can trace back our destination back to one of these first steps where we made a choice to settle. And we made a choice to say, I'm going to give in to something. I'm gonna do something. And maybe we knew the direction it would take us. Maybe we had gone down that path before. Maybe we were aware of this. Maybe it was something that we weren't really aware of because we weren't paying attention. But in some way, we gave in, and we settled, and we said yes. We just surrendered a little bit. And then, you know, journey of 1,000 steps. 1,000 steps later, we go, how did I get myself here? Why am I here again? You know, we could trace it back. Say it was that first step where we settled. Or maybe it was that first step of us stalling, of us, instead of just saying no to what we know we shouldn't do, and just making that decision, that right decision right then, maybe we took some time. We said, you know, I'll think about it a little bit. Or I'm not going to say no yet. Right? I'll just play around with it a little bit. And maybe in 5 minutes I'll say no. Or another day I'll say no. But we took that time. And the first step, though, determines that destination. Unless there is repentance, unless there's turning from that, we're going to find ourselves in that destination from the first step that we've taken. And Jesus wants to help you stop taking those first steps. Yes, he's interested in not getting us to that destination, but it's also that path And the power of Jesus Christ is stronger than the power of sin in your life. The power of Christ is stronger than that. And in Jude, verse 24, it says, "Now unto him that is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy." And that's an encouraging verse. Because we look at ourselves and we say, I can't fight this. I can't do this. But then we look at Jesus Christ and he says, I can do this. And we can do all things through Christ which strengthens us. And he is the one that is able to keep us from falling. And he's able to keep us from even those first steps. Even those smallest steps in the wrong direction. And I think tonight we need to make the choice to take a first step toward Jesus Christ. Because that's the direction we need to be heading. That's the destination we want, is Jesus Christ. And he wants us to take those first steps toward him. And tonight maybe that's being saved. That's you making that choice to turn from your sin and to trust in Jesus Christ. Saying, I need to take that first step of believing on Jesus Christ for my salvation. But he has some step that he wants you to take. That he wants you to take tonight, that he wants you to take tomorrow, that will head you in the right direction. And he wants to keep you from going in the wrong direction. So what steps are you going to take tonight? What steps are you going to take tomorrow? What are the steps that you're going to take in the coming days? And where are those steps taking you? What direction are those steps going? What destination is at the end of that journey? Let's take steps that don't head us toward where the flesh wants us to go. Let's take that first step toward Jesus Christ. Let's close with prayer.